What is your name?
My name is Peter Quill, okay? Dude, chill out.
Move!
Why?
Ronan may have questions for you.
Hey, you know what? There's another name you might know me by.
Star-Lord.
Who?
Well, Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw. Guys?
Move!
I forget this.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat. Wonder what kind of a speed I'm getting into.
And welcome to Behind the Panels, the comic book show that has 12% of a plan. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Dave Longo.
I am Groot.
In this issue, Marvel announced new ongoing books with Spider-Woman and S.H.I.E.L.D. Arrow adds more actors to its growing quiver, and someone is auctioning off Bill Kane. Then the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles blow up a tower on September 11. It's official. Michael Bay hates America. Also, Bodies Low, the sign language of Hawkeye, and more in what we've been reading. Plus our most kick-assiest kick-ass pick of the week ever, Guardians of the Galaxy. This is Behind the Panels.
Ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing.
Just a song chosen at random.
Yeah, just at random.
And how awesome was that in the film? Anyway, we're going to get to that in a minute because we're going to whip through our typical first half of the show, which takes usually anywhere between 20 and 40 minutes, depending on how much we've got to talk about, because we have so much to say about this week's Kick-Ass Pick of the Week, because it is frankly, let's not beat around the bush, it is frankly one of our favorite things that's happened to us geek-wise this year.
Absolutely.
So very, very excited about that. But
what film is this?
Have you not seen it yet?
We saw a film?
Yeah. but it's interesting, sort of going back because, watch this. I'm receiving a message from beyond the stars, people.
There. Now let's see. Yes, the lump's gone down.
My head feels better, but I am here to destroy you. Why did you help me?
You don't understand. You are important, as is every living thing on Earth. Life is a precious gift. It should not be taken. It's not for us to take. And so we protect it, fight for it. Even the life of a being from another world, even a being who would destroy us, must be helped.
Your words disturb me.
And we'll have more feedback from our listeners later. look, as I said, we're going to whip through this first half of the show. I mean, you probably heard that we have got Groot in the house to give us an opinion. Groot, have you got anything to add to that?
I am Groot.
I thought so. We've all sort of been very excited about this book this week, but we have done a little bit of reading. So let's get into that section as rapidly as we humanly possibly can.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
Well, I read a few lines this week, and I think Dave Longo summed it up nicely just before we went on air and saying, was there anything good out this week? look, I'm just going to quickly mention Deep Gravity, which was a book out from Dark Horse this week. It's another sci-fi thing. I didn't mind this one too much. It's got some nice art. It's another big space epic, where there seem to be a lot more space epics coming out for some reason at the moment.
It's an unusual thing. Just like when there's a big horror film come out, there seems to be a lot of horror titles that come out as well.
Yeah, look, so Deep Gravity is not one I want to dwell on too much, but it is a big sprawling epic, and I think the first issue only gives us the merest of hints about what this book is going to be about. So go check that one out. Just get it digitally, because I think it's one of those ones that you want to kind of test the waters with a little bit before you sort of commit to a full series. And again, How much can you tell from the first issue of a series unless it really just grabs you by the short and curlies?
And when they do, sometimes they can disappoint later. So yeah, you really exactly got to get right. a couple of issues in to see where it's going.
And I often find with a lot of these sprawling space epics and things, it's better to get a trade of the first thing. I know that's you know, me just, you know, basically killing the floppy market, you know, by just saying, wait for the trade for everything, people. But, you know, in this case, I think it's true.
It's
but
the same with Low coming out this week. It's like a big space opera thing where they put so much into it.
Yeah. Low reminded me, okay, well, let's mention Low because guess who it's by, people? Rick Remender. Low was...
Remender.
Remender, the 1st of November. Yeah, no. But will Rick Remender ever be forgot? No, because he has about 50 titles coming out every month, as we
Quoth
discovered in
the
last
Remender.
Never more. but the thing is, it's an interesting setup, Low. Low has got some beautiful art in it. It kind of feels almost like an adult, a non-all-ages version of The Deep in a lot of ways. It's got a family on a submersible, sort of, going into this outer rim kind of territory. The Earth is about to be engulfed by the sun. And, you know, there's the wife is looking for something looking for something otherworldly, something more ancient, whereas the husband's convinced the salvation's in finding this third city, this mythical third city. And they have these suits that go out, and there's these outlander people on the outskirts who have kind of got what would you say, David? The kind of they've got a bit of a grudge,
yes,
with these family, yeah, because they've been hunted, or their creatures have been hunted. So there's a rivalry there, and it gets into a bloody conflict where and you should have left on a cliffhanger at the end of this first issue. And I kind of want to come back to it. I'm kind of interested in seeing where it goes. I also felt as though I've seen a lot of this before. Did you feel that, Dave?
Yeah, totally, yeah. I'll be back for the next issue at least.
I'll come back for yeah, because I want to know, because there's enough there to keep me interested. And let's face it, we're going to be reading, Rick Remender's going to dominate our lists anyway, yeah, so we may as well just volunteer.
read everything he writes.
Just volunteer for the Remender Army.
I believe that...
I've sent away for my Remender Army badge.
I believe the future of comic books is that all comics will be written by...
It's the all-new Remender now.
It's been prophesied now, guys.
The new Remender 52.
And yeah, what he doesn't write will be written by Bendis. So.
That's right. The split between, and then a whole bunch will be solicited by Matt Fraction, but they'll start running late. what else came out this week? We had there's a really good short story, and I wanted to mention again Vertigo Quarterly Magenta. There's a short story in there by Ryan K. Lindsay, who, even if I didn't know him, I'd say this is one of the best stories in the anthology this week. It's kind of very, very much like some of his other work, in the sense that it's sort of a simple story about a boxer, and it's got some of the most beautiful art I've seen there. The colouring in this art looks like something that either you know, Hollingsworth or even Francesco Francavilla, that kind of really kind of simple tones in there, but really retro styles of colours, and it really sells this boxing story that he's put in there. And it's very character driven, which is what Lindsay does so well. So big shout out to Ryan. It's very, very awesome. But of course, one of the ones we always love is Hawkeye, and Hawkeye came out this week in a sign language issue,
yeah.
because Clint's gone deaf again.
I almost wanted to learn sign language just to read it.
Yeah.
But then I thought, like, aren't comics for everybody already? Like, or is this just for the people?
Although it kind of fits her, because comics are such a visual medium.
True. Yeah. So yeah, because if you can't lip read, then here's Hawkeye. But it was a great issue, though.
It's one of those things because, you know, I think Hawkeye's had more gimmick
issues. It should have been the whole book
in sign language. Cutting back to, like the Pizza Dog issue.
Come on, if you're going to have a book that's got a gimmick every month, every 6 months.
No,
in the case of Hawkeye.
I was going to say, Hawkeye's had more gimmick issues than probably
any... That's probably why he's quit, hey?
Yeah.
That he's run out of gimmicks.
He's run out of things. I suppose I could do this whole thing in Semaphore. I could we could use smoke signals for the next issue. That's not really going to work. But
invisible ink.
Invisible ink. You have to
just blank white pages.
You have to, each issue comes with a lemon to rub against the paper.
Okay. It's just blank panels, and it's draw your own Hawkeye.
Blank panels with speech bubbles. You draw the picture. Right.
or the Marvel method.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's an idea for a month-long event, the Marvel Method, where all the dialogue bubbles are blank.
Yeah, but DC but DC would do it. Like true. It's like but they call it the Marvel Method. it's something that's
the Marvelous Method.
The Marvelous Method.
Marvelous Method.
The other new book that came out this week, before we talk about a book that ties in very closely to this week's pick, was Bodies, which is a new Vertigo title. Which draws you in because it's got that beautiful Fiona Stevenson cover.
And then you're like, where is this cover in the book?
Yeah, because she does this really great 40s and 50s pin-up inspired artwork, and she's got this sort of 40s pin-up glamour girl on the front, and the image is splattered with blood. And basically the story is that a body has been found in four different time zones, and a different artist has drawn each of those time zones.
And interestingly enough, with this book, is that I got really invested in the first three pages, was really enjoying the character in the first three pages, and then as soon as I turn over and we cut to another time zone, the book lost me.
I
was like, I wasn't that interested in the idea of mixing time zones. I wanted to see more what was going on in the modern
day. This is the problem with all these multi-tiered stories.
I wasn't that interested.
Maybe like we can count the movies that have done it successfully Pulp Fiction maybe is the only one like that comes to mind, like, because as Dave says, you get invested, you get interested, then you're out.
And then they took us away. Exactly.
So, and in comics, it's a really bad idea, I think, had because you have to wait a month for the next one.
I had the opposite thing. I wasn't really drawn in by the modern day stuff at all. And then suddenly we were in Victorian London, and then there was the 1940s stuff, and those stories interested me. But the 40s one was like right at the end, and the Victorian London, as you say, was over before it even got started. Mm. So I don't know whether like down the track, like a whole issue will be dedicated to...
The only thing I will say about this is it's only 8 issues long, so it's not a huge amount of investment. So hopefully what I might do in this situation is actually leave it now until the 8 are out.
I think that's exactly what I'm going
to
do.
Because I don't know if I could stand to do this as a month.
Yeah. And it might be worth returning. Yeah, we'll definitely return to it. Yeah.
It's not that bad of an issue, really. It's just kind of garbled
up at the moment.
It's a good story and it's an intriguing concept, but you're right. It's hard to kind of commit to something
This should have been released as a graphic novel. If you're going to do this kind of complicated storytelling, it should have been a graphic novel.
In my mind, it's like hearing the first verse of four different songs every month.
Yes.
Yeah, the song analogy is really good, actually. Someone just skipping just as you start getting into a song. Yeah. Yeah. Of course, Justice League 32 came out this week as well. It's a funny thing. This is a book, when we were talking about this last week, when we were saying it coming out, Justice League's always good for a read. It's been on fire lately.
We did say that.
And then this week... disappointed me because...
Although, do you know what's really interesting is I read last month's Justice League as well, and then I actually forgot the Doom Patrol were even introduced at the end.
Oh, me too.
And so it's like when I opened, I went, who are these people?
I had a similar thing this week because I read...
You know what just clicked in my head? Sorry, Richard. Yeah. Just like...
SpongeBob? Who are these?
This month for DC has been let's shit in the mouth of Grant Morrison. Sorry for the swearing.
No. We're allowed to say that one.
Like, it's like we had that Batman... Robin.
Yeah.
And now it's Doom Patrol.
Yeah, it's like all the good that you did, we're going to undo.
and also it's in a Justice League title, which is the title that put Morrison back on the DC map, wasn't it? So, it's
it was just a very, very weak issue.
They're going to release All-Style Superman 2 next week.
By Remender.
Where he emerges from the sun. Oh dear. So look, the other one we'll quickly mention is long story short, Justice League, my experience was I read it on the Wednesday night when it came out, and then the next day sat down and thought, did I read Justice League yesterday? I can't remember a single thing about
it. Can I tell you my the only thing I really remember about that book was you go through this boring ass beginning, all this dialogue about, you know, Element Girl and Doom Patrols, and then they go out and they're trying to do it. And then suddenly the Justice League burst out of the, you hear the boom and you see them all come flying out, and you just kind of go, oh, thank God. Yeah. You know, it's like at least something's happening, you know? It was not an impressive
book. Just very quickly, Guardians of the Galaxy number 17 came out this week, which was a good issue. I mean, yeah. Actually, that wasn't a bad issue this week at all. And but the one that I liked even more was the 100th anniversary
yes.
issue that came out, Guardians, because it actually was set...
Can we just say I love how Bendis like builds up over 12 issues of storyline yeah. and then wraps it up in like five pages?
It's funny. I mean, there's a lot to like in this Guardians issue, and
especially the last panel.
Yeah, the last panel was pretty magnificent, and yeah, exactly. It's got all these things, and it's just kind of like there was almost in two pages, like, "Hey, Gamora, you're back. Hey, you're back. Rocket, you're back." But yes, the last panel promises what's gonna a story we've been wondering about since the return of the Guardian. So next month's issue is what's been happening to. We'll just may as well say it is what's where because it's been publicized everywhere. Where the hell's Richard Rider been?
Where is it?
Which yeah. did you guys notice they spelled incorrectly in the last panel?
Oh really? It is. They spelled it with a Y. Richard Rider, the cancer versus Thanos.
And then
Thanos.
If you go to the next page, they correct
it. They correct it on the big trade ad at the back. That's really interesting, actually.
He's been gone that long. They've forgotten
who he is. Spell his name.
No, we're not actually finding out about that Richard Rider. We're finding about Richard Rider with a Y. So
can
we're still
you imagine
waiting.
Yeah. After this long?
It's a parallel Richard Rider. The 100th anniversary issue, which is really good. So it's like 25 years in the future. You had like Rocket and his like nephews or something. And you had like three little Rocket raccoons running around. And you also had, what was it? Oh, yeah. You actually had the return of Cosmo in there running something in there as well. And you had Gamora in the Star-Lord outfit because you don't know what's happened to Peter Quill at the start of the issue. And the thing about these 100th anniversary issues is they start sort of mid-story, they end on a cliffhanger, and that's it though.
Yeah, they're completely outside of the scope.
But I want to read them more of that story now. That's really, really cool. Next week's highlights very quickly. There's Thanos, the Infinity Revelation hardcover original graphic novel coming out by Jim Starlin, mm-hmm. the master of the Marvel Cosmic Universe. We won't be covering that next week because we'll be having a special guest on to talk about the other book that's finishing next week, which is Kick-Ass 3. We'll be having Laramie Taylor back on to talk about that.
I believe we're actually doing Kick-Ass Complete, aren't we? We're going to talk about 3, but
we'll give our thoughts about the whole thing, Kick-Ass
yeah.
saga, including Hit Girl. But Infinity Revelation, we'll be talking about the week after that in detail, so we won't probably talk about it much next week. Look, just some highlights next week really quickly. Earth 2, number 26, which is the penultimate issue for the team of Nicola and Tom. Grayson number 2, that shows that's Tom Taylor and Nicola Scott. Grayson number 2, because we kind of said we'd return to that. Green Arrow 34, Green Lantern 34, Silent Hill Downpour and story. I'm highlighting this one because Tristan Jones has done the art. I've seen a lot of the his preview stuff that he's put up on his Facebook page. It is, and take your drink, John D. This is next level stuff.
Right.
John, our listener and good friend John D has always joked every time I say next level, you should take a drink. It's my equivalent if it's on my iPad.
Right.
Squidder number 2, because I kind of like the first issue and I want to see where it goes.
I was kind of confused by the first issue.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why I want to see where it goes. There's a new Image mini, two new Image miniseries coming out. There's Genius and Imperial. We come back to Spread. As I said, Kick-Ass 3 is finishing, and very timely, new issues of Legendary Star-Lord and Rocket Raccoon next week as well. So they're things that we'll be reading next week, or at least things to look out for next week. And in almost record time, I think we're up to the news headlines.
Cool.
And Marvel has announced a new Spider-Woman ongoing series from writer Dennis Hopeless and artist Greg Land, out in time for November's Spider-Verse event.
Marvel has also revealed that a new S.H.I.E.L.D. comic book series will finally hit shelves this year from superstar writer Mark Waid and a rotating series of artists.
Oh, it doesn't continue Jonathan Hickman's great story? Former NYPD Blue star Charlotte Ross has joined the cast of Arrow to play the mother of Felicity Smoke. Meanwhile, J.R. Ramirez has been cast as Wildcat.
Kelly Fry will play supervillainess Plastique in CW CW's The Flash.
Guardians of the Galaxy has already nabbed the biggest Thursday opening of 2014 with $11.2 million in the US alone.
From 4th of August, Batman co-creator Bob Kane's personal copies of Detective Comics number 27, 245, will go up for auction via Comic Connect and Metropolis Auctions.
Wow. Finally, Paramount Australia got a bit of unwanted publicity when they released their latest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles poster this week, depicting an exploding tower and the local release date, September 11.
Oops.
Yeah, and that's probably not the publicity they were looking for on and what's largely being called a pretty good Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film from the early buzz that we're hearing. Apparently it's...
It may not be as bad as we originally thought.
Or hoped. I think we wanted that one to fail dismally just so we could have a gloriously bad addition to your list.
Been some already, but
it's been that kind of year. But that's for another show. That would be for something along the lines of our two other shows, which we should give a quick plug to, GMC or Geek Movie Club, and Film Actually is back.
Absolutely, so you look for those on their own feeds or on the Geek Super feed. Which I do want to throw out an apology to people who got contact with us. Film Actually did miss the Super feed for one day, but it's on there now.
Sloppy McVeigh, sloppy.
I know.
You'd never be allowed into the galaxy's greatest team with that kind of work. And I'm so excited because we've rushed through the first half of the show just so we can talk about this film, which Dave and I have seen twice. We all saw together last night. Mm. Without any further ado, it's time for a bit of this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
I was only a kid when I left Earth. I had no idea what the universe had in store for me.
Our worlds are facing an unstoppable threat. You guys are our last chance.
I guess we're stuck together. Partners.
Are you telling me the fate of 12 billion people is in the hands of a thief, two thugs, a murderer, and a maniac?
This might not be the best idea.
We will not stand by as evil
wipes out billions of innocent lives.
Why would you risk your life for this?
Because right now, life's giving us a chance.
If we don't protect the galaxy, who will?
We'll follow your lead.
Oh, yeah.
It's real!
Totally fake.
I'm Groot.
Thank you.
What is that?
It's a bomb.
And you leave it lying around?
I was gonna put it in a box.
What's a box gonna do?
You just wanna suck the joy out of everything.
Well, if that trailer hasn't got you excited, then probably the next half hour of conversation will.
The most exciting thing about that trailer, listening to that again, is that I'm hoping for an extended director's cut of the film because there's a lot of stuff in that trailer not in the film.
There were a couple of scenes in there, actually.
I didn't watch the trailer.
There's actually a lot of dialogue in there that is not in the film.
So there's probably a lot of deleted scenes. There could be alternate takes.
Or they could just be stuff that they shot for the trailer.
But Guardians of the Galaxy. We have been talking about this since it was just a blink in the eye of James Gunn, before James Gunn was even attached to the project. And when it was announced, it was one that all the way back in issue 41, 42, something like that, we decided to go and read the comics and fell in love with them. In fact, David, you recommended it to me, and it had been recommended to you.
I mean, I'm going to throw out a big old plug to a good friend, Josh. Not Josh from film, actually Josh from where I work, who basically said, have you read the Marvel Extended or Alter Cosmic Universe? And I said, no, I haven't read any of that. And he goes, you need to read this.
Yeah.
And he gave me the start point and said, just read from here on.
And for all of, and Dave, you said that listening to us talk about it, you went and listened to it in turn, and your brother recommended it to you as well. So it was kind of...
I smashed through everything.
Yeah.
Annihilation, everything.
The build up to Annihilation all the way through to the Annihilators. Basically.
The Annihilators, yeah. So the Thanos imperative.
Which
is where we mentioned before.
And it took me like a week to read it all.
Exactly.
Which is,
I was pretty much the same thing. And I mean, Thanos imperative is where we mentioned before where Richard Rider is effectively gone. So we've read all that. So we're well versed in the, and I've probably more than any other character that's appeared in the Marvel Cinematic Universe so far. I've got more of a connection to these characters because I've read literally everything that they've been in.
Yeah.
So coming into this, I had,
and I mean, we've even gone back and read stuff that are like tangentially tied to it, like, you know, the Thanos stuff, like the Infinity Gauntlet, the Infinity
the 10-issue Thanos miniseries.
You should see my long boxes at home.
Nova Run.
Like, yeah.
We're pretty much read everything that's important.
I've read everything in the cosmic universe from the lead up
from about 2006 onwards.
Yeah, the lead up to Annihilation.
Yeah.
It was basically a soft reboot, wasn't it, really?
It was.
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah.
So, keeping that in context, keeping all that in mind, we read hundreds of issues of cosmic stuff as a result of this. So, all of us would have gone in having really high expectations or high hopes. But completely afraid that they were going to stuff this up. Mm.
And we've also got to point out that, especially considering that the post-credit sequence to
Thor the Dark World
left us a little bit confused.
Yeah.
Because we kind of walked out going, it's awesome, but at the same time, oops, you know?
And not it was, me, if we remember. Yeah. I put a shoe down?
Yeah.
Could remind you, David, this is exactly what you said when that first trailer came out.
This is going to be huge.
I'm going to call it now, and I'll eat a shoe on air if I'm wrong.
Eat a shoe, okay.
Yeah,
but I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, looking forward to episode 115.
Dave eats a shoe. That's our pick of the week.
We put that one on video.
Yeah. I stole it from Werner Herzog.
Okay.
But, you know,
eating a shoe is
I
like
think
going
this will
back
make more money than the Avengers.
Ooh, big call.
That is a big call.
I think it's going to be
How
do you like your shoe?
Because I can't imagine any human being not paying to see that.
I think my favorite part though is when you said, how do you like your shoe?
The thing is though, I think I said this last week as well, I absolve publicly Dave Longo from any shoe eating obligations. Because I agree with the last thing he said in that. I find it impossible that any human being would not love this film because it is freaking perfect.
So we should go talk to the guy who we saw at the cinema last night who actually walked out just going, didn't like that.
You always want to grab them and go, why?
Why?
Do you have no soul, Jim?
You want to shake them so hard they don't even get a chance to answer. Yeah. Like,
I think at this point we need to stop recording though, because in that clip it said we weren't going to talk about this till episode 150.
Yeah, no. That was when Dave ate a shoe.
Oh, that's when he ate a shoe.
By that stage, I reckon we'll have the box office figures in.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The DVD release. Like,
you know, we'll know how much money it's made. So.
Understood. Okay.
So,
forward thinking.
Look, I think we've shot our wads too early. And, you know, I think I said last week, sploosh. Because literally this is, I can't imagine a comic book adaptation that is more faithful, that is more joyful, that is more action-packed, that is more funny, and just more on target than this film.
But we must also be very clear that if you haven't read the Guardians series or the Cosmic Universe, you're not going to be lost.
It won't make a difference.
It's such a clever adaptation that they have basically just brought you into this world. And Peter Quill has been set up as our muse. Because he's from the 80s and because he's human, we get to see the world through his eyes. Mm. Even though he lives in it and is quite a denizen of that world, he's still the outsider. And he's always going to be the outsider because of being human. You know, and I think that was a really clever move. And I think just the use of the soundtrack alone is going to make you slide into this.
We're going to talk, and we'll talk about this a little bit more when we get into our spoiler section a little bit later on. There will be a spoiler section that's coming back because it's a film special.
Oh, we also we have to have a spoiler section for a particular thing we want to do.
So. There's definite things we want to do, but you know, we get our title drop from the very beginning of this film, which is when we know this film is something a little bit different. Mm. It opens with a scene of great tragedy, which kind of defines and Peter Quill, and that's something I do want to talk about a little bit later on.
That was a little bit like Up.
That's exactly what I said to somebody the next day after seeing it. I said, it's like Up. You get this first 10 minutes, or it's not 10 minutes in this film, it's 5 minutes here. You get this first
not
5
even
minutes.
5 minutes, hey.
Yeah, you get this opening sequence.
It's pre the Marvel logo.
Yeah. It breaks your heart and then is joyful from woe to go from the rest of the film. And that
plays you like a violin.
It does. It plays you like a mixtape.
Like in 2 minutes, you're rolling tears in a bloody
that's the thing. I mean, it's kind of like I tried to describe this to someone. We use a lot of musical analogies as we go through, but I try to describe this. It's like I went to a concert of my favorite band, stood at the side of the stage, and yelled out like a jukebox, "Play that one! Play that one next! My God, they played that one!" You know, and it was just hit after hit after hit, and it was kind of like you have, after reading hundreds of issues of a comic, you have in your head a certain way that those characters should act and behave. And yeah, look, sure. I mean, look, you know, I always had in my head Rocket Raccoon as, you know, Ray Winston and all that sort of stuff. But you don't know. Like, Bradley Cooper is not for a second phoning this in.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough.
But you didn't read that the first way.
No, when I read Guardians of the Galaxy, Rocket was very much.
No, but you said, but I actually remember saying to you at the time, I imagined him as Sam, from Max, from Sam and Max.
That's right. And I was saying to you that I imagined him as kind of this kind of rough and grumble, right? What I got was the Rocket that I originally read. He was turned into a Cockney by
the cartoons.
And we
kind of
went,
games,
I'm kind of went, okay, well, if we're going to do that, then Ray Winston. But what I ended up getting was my Rocket. Yeah. I ended up getting the Rocket that I had in my head when I read the book the first time. If anything, this book just absolutely utterly nailed.
And he almost doesn't even, like in the film, he doesn't do like your I'm from America like kind of thing. Like it's all over the shop in like a beautiful, like messed up way. Like the accent fluctuates and he goes street tough in some parts. And it's tongue in cheek, you know. It's almost a nondescript.
Well, it's like the fact that Yondu has this thick southern accent. And you sit there and you go, at first you go, why? And then you go, you know what?
Doesn't
Who
matter.
Cares?
Because
they're all so good. Like, as Richard said, no one's phoning it in.
No, and to quote Doctor Who, there's a South in every planet.
Exactly. You know?
Finn Diesel, who has like three words, and like mine knew, like they're said in different ways.
Sorry, those words would be,
I am Groot.
Yeah. But he is just as professional and just as like amazing in the movie as like the live actors are.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing. I mean,
with three lines.
With a film like this, it was always going to be important from the very beginning that you actually liked the characters, that you cared enough about them. Because for us being comics geeks, and we've said we've read all the issues, we knew the characters, we already loved them. Mm-hmm. But for most of the mainstream audiences, the hardest thing is going to be, okay, I'm meeting all these characters for the first time. It's not like Captain America, where even if you haven't read a comic or seen a movie before, you know who Captain America is. Mm. You've heard of Thor, you've heard of Wonder Woman, you've heard of Batman, all those kind of things. But this is the first time any of these characters have ever been seen on screen.
By mass market.
It seriously is like Star Wars, Indiana Jones levels.
And that's like, what it felt like.
Like Indiana Jones is putting you into what 19... When does Raiders take place?
1938.
Yeah, and which in the 80s is a world removed.
Yeah,
you know, and then Star Wars is another thing.
I point out that when we actually did Guardians as a pick of the week, the Abnett Landing run of Guardians, one of the things I said to you is, I said, if they ever make a film of this, because at this point we hadn't had the official announcement.
We weren't confirmed. Yeah,
we kind of knew that this was one of Kevin Feige's pet projects, but we hadn't got a confirmation. And I remember saying, if they make a film of this, and I think this is how I sold it to you originally, was I said, if they make a film of this, this is the Star Wars for Next
Generation. Exactly what you said, yeah.
And I said, and I think at the time everyone was kind of going, well, that's a big call and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I stand by it. Now I've seen it. This is that sense of fun and glee that you got when you saw Star Wars in 77. This is that sense of you go in there and it's just an alien world, this universe laid out in front of you with no over-explanation. No, they don't explain who the collector is.
Which
they
is an amazingly brave move.
And they just go, here it is.
Yeah.
Just do it. You know, just accept it. You
which
know?
I know, I think some critics have already said that's a problem they have with it. So much is going on. They don't know what's, you know, they can't follow things. Well, I think you have to be very distracted to not follow there's, it.
There's well, in what, a sense, it's what I find is wrong with modern filmmaking today.
Yeah. Though,
because we were more, and Star Wars, if they had sat there and gone, we're going to Tatooine. It's a desert planet that has this many people. Yeah. You know, we just went, here it is.
Yeah.
You know, this
what is Tashi Station? Well, it's right. They sell power converters.
What exactly,
they also sell blue milk.
What exactly is a moisture converter, a moisture adapter?
You know, there's a thing that I was taught at a young age, right? It's a very simple thing that you can do to enjoy a movie, right?
Yeah.
And it's something that critics should do more, which is you use those two ears on your head and you listen to what's being said.
Yeah.
And like, that will help you understand what's happening.
But think of it this way. If you go traveling, like you go to Japan, it's a completely foreign land to you. You don't stand there and going, well, what's the origin of that sign? Where did it come from? Why is it here? Why is no one explaining that to me? You just accept that it's there
and
try and enjoy yourself while you're in Japan.
There's a rule to fantasy and science fiction, which is that everything should be grounded in a reality.
Yeah.
The reality must be true to itself.
Yes.
As long as you are grounded in its own reality, it doesn't have to be our reality. As long as it's grounded in its reality and it stays true to the rules of its reality, then it can just expand out that universe any way it wants to, and we will accept it because we know the rules coming in. Guardian sets that up nice and early. We know the rules that we're coming into, and then they say, just ride with it. See how you go. Star Wars did the same thing. Modern day filmmaking, we have a tendency to over-explain everything. How often do you see movies now where they walk and they go, a bench?
Yeah,
you know, and you sit there and go, you didn't need to say it. I can see a bench.
Yeah. There's only one time in the film they do that, and it's during the prison sequence where Gamora explains what Rocket's done. Going, oh, I see what you've done. Minus spoilers.
And that actually stands out a little bit.
It stands out because it's the only bit of exposition dialogue in the whole film. And it didn't really need it, but it was just, I think it was to give Gamora a line. So I don't think Zoe Saldana had and she's probably paid by the line or something. So. Yeah.
But I mean, like, we can't be smug, you know, douches about this because it's like there are little kids in it too.
And
like, I don't think there's anything in the movie that like is going to confuse a little kid.
No.
No.
Not at all. Well, like, I think there's one joke that will need explaining.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it'll go over their head, right? Yeah. Metaphor. You know, it's an in-joke if you've seen the movie. But yeah, I was just saying, like, kids going to see this movie, like, there are little pieces that help.
Yes.
You know, like, and that's fair because we're not talking about, you know, 40 minutes total of the movie. We're talking about, like, two seconds.
And literally, if that's the worst thing I can say about this film, then, you know, and I've already given this 12 out of 10. Mm. So
look, for me, it goes to 11. Okay.
Yeah. The thing about this film is, I mean, like, even we love the characters because we already knew them.
Mm.
But what the film does that's very clever is it introduces the characters in a way that lets you get to know them. And that even throughout the film, even though it's not heavily filled with exposition, there are those little moments throughout the film that break your heart or get you a little bit closer to the character. So we were talking when we were having coffee before the show, we were talking about this moment where a very drunk Rocket Raccoon kind of complains about his lot in life and the way people treat him. And
He's sick of being called a rodent
and he didn't ask to be like that. He didn't ask to be modified. And it's like, it's a real breathtake moment. Like, you kind of just sharpen.
He gets
a
tear in his eye when he's doing it.
I get a tear in my eye. I am not afraid to say that there was at least three moments the first time I saw this film where I got a little bit misty-eyed and I actually had to wipe a tear away during one of those moments last night because I'd lived that moment again with these characters. It's like you feel like you're just riding along with them, and which is the most beautiful feeling in the world in one of these movies. It's like Raiders. It's like Star Wars. You feel as though you're just in the back seat while they're having their adventure because it's so accessible. It is so human despite the fact that you've got a raccoon, a tree, a green killing machine.
A grey killing machine.
A grey killing machine and you know, all these other... A blue
killing machine.
You know, a cornucopia
of
killing machines. The film is a very film-literate film as well, which is another thing that I think... people have picked up on very quickly because there's some really obvious references in there. And I think the scene that everyone's seen that's in the trailer is a very obvious Raiders of the Lost Ark reference.
Yes. Well, maybe we should hold it.
Oh, look, you know, I think it's fair because they actually do reference that because
there's a call out to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
There's a call out to Raiders.
There's actually a call out to a few films. Where he rattles things off as films.
He's like, I guess that's got an Ark of the Covenant, Maltese Falcon kind of a...
So, I mean, I think
you know,
there's a lot of 80s references.
Yeah. we won't spoil the there's one we'd forgotten about from our first viewing. And then it pops up. It's a recurring reference to an 80s classic film, and it's brilliantly used.
I just want to jump on a couple of things you said. Like, first, like, every character having all the moments, you know, like, and it's just feels to me like that they care. They really care about all of these characters, everybody in the movie. So they're making sure that everybody gets their moment or multiple moments. Everybody's fully fleshed out.
Yep.
They're all fully fleshed out. Every person on screen is completely fleshed out.
Hero and villain both.
It's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, all
you
know,
and villain, exactly. And
one of the shortest running times too. It's only 121 minutes.
Yeah, and this is the kind of thing, it's like that I just want to, I don't mean to like bash on another movie, you know, but whatever, Transformers that we saw recently.
You can throw as much shade on that as you want.
But you get the sense that like Michael Bay doesn't give a crap about anything that's going on. It's just like, do this, do whatever. Whereas this is like, every little line has been paid attention to. Every little thing is... And there's also like, the representations of females in the movie is like, amazing.
I think that's something that hasn't been picked up on, because everyone talks about, oh yeah, Black Widow, strong female team member. But you've got a very strong female protagonist in Gamora.
Yeah.
But then Nebula's just as strong, as like, because she's kind
of... And the two of them, my memory of it, I might be wrong, but I don't think there's a single scene in the movie where either of them are saved by a man.
No.
No.
I don't think there's a single one.
No,
there is one. Yes.
Oh, there is one.
There's one pretty major.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Which I'll be coming back to.
But to be fair, I think she returns the favor.
She didn't really want it to happen. But anyway.
But also, like Nebula pulls herself up by her own bootstraps after she's knocked down once.
Yeah. But I didn't mean to bring up like a whole female.
Let's also point out that we've got those two very strong females. But we've also got a female as the head of the Novas as well.
And it never disrespects.
Played by Glenn Close. Fabulous choice.
Yeah. It never disrespects raccoons or trees. You know, like,
in fact, if you watch the credits, stay to the very end of the credits anyway.
Yes.
Where there's a line, and look, minus spoilers, but I'm going to say it anyway. There is a line, no raccoons or trees were harmed during the production of this film. So I think it's just one of those nice. But that's kind of giving you an idea of the sense of humor of this film.
Yes.
That it's willing to take the Mickey out of itself, but at the same time be true to itself as well. It doesn't take the piss to the point that it's so self-mocking that it's almost made itself irrelevant. It's actually giving you it does that so you like it. And once you're in, it's like how did you describe 80s action films this morning, David? Like, if you take,
I was saying, if you the balance of the classic 80s action film, and the one I took into as an example was Beverly Hills Cop, where you take it and you say, you take all the humor out of it, you still got a damn good action film. You take all the action out of it, you've got a damn good comedy. It's that absolute perfect balance of the two,
which is what Guardians has done.
And Guardians has done that.
Apologies in advance for the hyperbole, but I think this might be one of the best.
We're way beyond
the
that
best,
now.
Yeah, no, this is one of the best scripts for a Hollywood blockbuster.
Agreed.
And in forever. It has everything. And the thing is that, like, this is such a tight script that I think it could be taught in film schools. Like,
agreed.
Like, in terms of, like, the balancing of character and the balancing of humor. And it's really emotion heavy as well. Talked much about that, but the movie is very emotional in surprising, not manipulative, but it's just there. It's like, you know, like with the use of the music and the opening
scene. There's an underlying kind of...
It's just brilliant filmmaking. You know?
There's a running sort of touchstone of Peter Quill's relationship to his mother, whose fate is obvious from literally the first frame of the film. And that kind of... As you say, the use of the music, you pointed this out before the show, which pervades the entire film.
It's almost profound, because the thing is that, like, you've seen from the trailer, Peter Quill carries around that music. And that music we hear throughout the movie. And then the thing is that these songs, most of them have been performed before, you know, we've been born.
Yeah, all of them are...
And let's just remember, in the movie, he quite literally risks his life...
Yeah.
For the music.
Yeah, and this is the thing. The thing is that music lives on like movies live on, you know? And then the thing is that Peter's mother lives on. And then not only does she live on in the movie to him, it lives on in CDs that we can go into a store and buy.
We
can listen to.
I know. You actually
know, we can own
me.
A piece of Peter Quill's history.
Exactly.
It becomes real, you know? Like,
That's what you said to me a couple of weeks ago. It's like, how awesome is it that we can buy Peter Quill's awesome mixtape.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing from the 80s. Like the fact that you could buy the stuff that was in the film. It's not just like a cheap cash in, a hat with the Guardian with Rocket Raccoon on it, or a t-shirt that says Awesome Mixtape, or an iPhone cover, although they do have the iPhone cover with the Awesome Mixtape thing on the back. But, you know, it is actually a physical thing we can go and buy. We can buy Peter Quill's Awesome Mixtape, listen to it. And then you're right, you take the film with you beyond.
Well, it'd be better if you mixtapes buy the mixtape, but they've got nothing to play it on.
Yeah.
Mixtapes.
I actually probably would.
It's so true, because mixtapes are always made for the people you love.
Yeah.
And the thing is that.
Oh, I've made mixtapes for girlfriends in the past. You know?
Yeah, well, CDs for me, but, you know.
CDs. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, that I think James Gunn has made a perfect mixtape, which is a metaphor for the whole movie, And that. He's given it to who he loves, and he loves the audience, and it's just like crazy.
That's absolutely, I think that's probably the best way to describe this film. This film is a love letter to the audience. This film is a love letter to comics. It's a love letter to
cinema.
It's so cinema. Like, yeah, the thing is, like, we can't praise that Marvel studio enough, can we? Because it's like, this movie is like one of the prettiest looking movies.
I do want to throw out a warning though, and this is going to sound really weird.
Warning,
because normally I would say, you know, James Gunn, he's an amazing director. Have a look at his other films and so forth. I'm actually going to say, if you've never heard of James Gunn, don't go back and look at his earlier films.
No, please do.
No. Don't until you've seen this. Right. Because if you actually go and watch Slither and Super.
Shut up, crime.
You're probably going to go, what the hell?
You know? If you're a kid, don't go watch Super.
By the way, if you have seen Slither, look out for an Easter egg in the film.
So it is.
Look, there's so many Easter eggs in this film, and we're going to get into a segment. Do you want to get into the segment now?
Let's get into it.
Okay. We're going to go into a spoiler section where we're going to talk about.
We're already 45 minutes in. We should probably go into a spoiler section.
Where we're going to talk about our top five favorite things in Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right, kiddies. I'm the spoiler.
Oh, goody.
Okay, so how are we going to do this? We're going to do this like, let's just go through our individual lists, I think, just around the table, right? Because if we do 5, 5, 5, 4,
it'll
4,
take
4,
forever.
I'll kick it off because I'm already speaking. for me, my top five, and it's like choosing five favorite children. So I have to say the opening pre-credit sequence with Quill's mother, because it sets the tone for the rest of the film. I won't say why, because it is a very emotional scene. But to me, it was a really bold move.
We're in spoilers, though. You can.
Okay, I can. Because Peter Quill's mother is dying of cancer, presumably. And the opening scene is him unwilling to kind of look at her, unwilling to hold her hand because he's frightened of what's happening. He doesn't want to let her go.
Yeah.
And we find out the mixtape is something that she's given him. And then she gives him another present and says, don't open it until after I'm gone. And then immediately after, he's abducted. And one of the lines that he has in there just sort of defines his character, which is, he's obviously been in a fight, and the mother says to him, you know, well, you've been fighting with the other boys again, Peter. And he says, yeah, they were picking on a little frog. They beat it with a stick and squished it for no good reason. And that to me, that's as powerful as Steve Rogers' line, I don't like bullies.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
So that set the tone for me for the rest of the film. The title drop.
Yeah.
Immediately, like we all talk about, we love title drops. It comes on with, is it Redbone or the Raspberries? I can't remember which song, and it's...
It's not 10cc.
10cc's the opening song. Anyway, comes on with a big 70s groove hit. He literally slides in under the titles, which drop in, and then he has like a... he's literally dancing through the cavern before you get to the Raiders of the Lost Ark
Singing into a small animal
and just kicking other ones casually out of the way.
It really is as iconic as movies can be, I think.
It's beautiful. It's like the introduction of Indiana Jones' hat.
Yes.
You know, we could get the helmet. And just in that sequence, you get his helmet.
Red eyes.
The red eyes and the helmet. It's the helmet we've been looking at in the comics for years. For me, quickly going through, I've got one in there that it'll be an honourable mention. Just the collector scene, full stop, because there's so many Easter eggs in there, including we're in spoilers section. If you look closely above the collector's shoulder, you'll see another Marvel character. You'll see things like Dark Elves. You'll see an alien slug from Slither in there. Yep. You'll also see Howard the Duck, who we may as well run the spoiler section, and this might be on your lists. Turns up in a post-credits.
Oh, it's on my list.
Yeah, well, there you go. So I'll leave you talk about that. Thanos.
Yes.
We actually get to see far more of Thanos in a turn
Thanos made it to my honorables. Do you believe it?
Oh, wow. I know. He was almost going to make it to my honorables, but just Thanos turning around and looking at the audience and grinning that grin. That was the first moment where I thought, oh my God, yeah. I can't take this anymore.
And Josh Brolin's voice.
And the final one for me has to be, before my honorable mention, is a big moment, a group moment towards the end. Peter Quill holding hands with the rest of them, embracing the energy. It's a scene almost straight out of the comics where he says to Ronan, "You said it yourself, bitch. We're the Guardians of the Galaxy." And to me, that's like, I just wanted to stand up and applaud.
Actually, now that we're in the spoiler section, before we hit lists, any more lists, that was actually something I want to talk about, because one of the things I love about this film is that it's true adaptation. Because the idea is, if you read the Abnett Lanning comic, it actually ends with him pulling a cosmic cube out to defeat Thanos. So we aren't going into Thanos in this. So they've taken that moment, but just modified it to say it's an Infinity Stone and it's Ronan, but it's the same basic concept.
Well, because they've already established that the Cosmic Cube is one of the Infinity
Stones.
That's
right.
So exactly the same thing. Honorable mention is the 17 minutes we already saw, which was the prison sequence, because the whole thing is just awesome.
And what I love about that as well is that we didn't get totally spoiled because there was more in it.
Yeah. Dave, your top five. Yeah,
My number five and four are pretty much similar to yours.
Yep.
Like, it's like the opening 2 minutes and then it's the title drop.
Yep.
But what I like about the opening 2 minutes in particular, the cancer scene, is because you have a lot of movies these days, don't you, where it's kind of like they want to keep things mysterious for whatever reason. But this is the kind of filmmaking you don't see often, where it's like, we're going to tell you the themes up front so that everything following is colored by that. And so I want to put the top 2 minutes there just because it makes the movie, in my opinion. Like, it takes it from a 10 to a 12 or an 11, as you've said.
Mine goes to 11.
Let's compromise, 11 and a half.
Yeah. My number three is just going to be the whole prison break.
The whole film, I think.
But in particular, this running thing of the Peter Quill having to get the rubber leg for Rocket Raccoon, if you remember. It's a brilliant payoff. Like, after 10 minutes, it's like, why do you need that rubber leg? Here it is. Like, I just thought you should get it.
Yeah, I just thought it would be funny.
And the other mention is
what did he look like hopping around?
When in the same prison sequence with the knife, and Drax goes, "I will keep this knife." And the prisoner goes, "That was my favorite knife."
And you were saying when we first saw it, like, it's such a gun moment.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's totally, yeah. And there's, of course, the Jackson Pollock thing.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, I don't know where I am, but whatever, is the space mask. Like, the Peter Quill taking the mask off and giving it to Gamora, that whole scene.
Yeah.
Then that leads into the whole, like... I'll just go to number two, which is the whole group battle at the end where there's like 10 people in the hallway and Groot grabs them all and slams them all. But it's made because Groot turns around and everybody in that audience is expecting I Am Groot to come in.
And he just smiles.
And he just smiles. It's a perfect moment.
It's a great smile.
It's a perfect moment of
cinema. Can I change my list?
And number one for me is, as we talked about before the show, was just... Behold, when Peter Quill comes out to the Pina Colada
song,
which is just
he's just floating through space. And where is he?
I could watch that 2 minutes on a loop for the rest of my life. Yeah, and I'm going to go see the movie twice tonight. So
and I'm actually probably going to. So
this list could have been about 20 entries long.
Oh,
wait,
I have
really
some honorable mentions.
I will save the honorable mentions till after all the lists are complete.
Okay.
So my number five, like you, I've actually written Quill's intro, music, and title drop. That entire opening sequence is just brilliant. I mean, from his dancing to the singing to the front. Yeah. It's brilliant. My number four, Groot smiles after knocking everybody down. Because it's such an... And that moment, my lovely wife turned to me at the end. She goes, "Groot was my favorite character."
Yeah.
For a character that only has three words, that's pretty good effort. My number three is the reveal of Cosmo. Purely... From a geek's point of view, the camera going by and you see him in the glass, you just go, "Ha ha!"
I know what you were thinking.
My number two was Rocket's breakdown, because I think Rocket's breakdown is just an amazing moment in that film. And my number one, I've just written Howard the mother freaking duck. And all I'm going to say is this:
little pond hopper.
Haven't heard that for a while. Yeah, look, you know, it's all over the web now. The final post-credit sequence is, it includes Cosmo and Howard.
Yes.
Cosmo runs up and licks the face of the collector after his lab's been destroyed.
And then you hear this voice off screen saying,
I can't believe you let him lick you. That's face. Disgusting.
And you see Howard the Duck sitting back with a margarita. just hanging his legs out there. It's a beautiful moment. It may not go anywhere.
I don't think it will, actually. I think it was just Gunn having fun.
But, you know, because he said we wanted to have something that's all our own. That Howard the Duck, if you're wondering, is voiced by Seth Green.
Yep.
It's fantastic.
So, so whether or not they use him later on, apparently it was offered to Nathan Fillion, who appears somewhere else in the film. The big blue alien that's in the prison sequence that Groot teaches a lesson almost immediately is Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
Mm. So,
and I'd like to point out that now that Howard the Duck is back home, because with Lucasfilm and Marvel coming to Disney, Howard is now home, back with Marvel again. And if they decided that they actually wanted to do another Howard the Duck film, and if he did it kind of like based on the Max series, I'm there, you know? Because Howard the Duck is not the character from the movie. If that's your only experience with Howard the Duck, that's not Howard the Duck. Howard the Duck is a rough old cab-driving, cigar-smoking duck who's kind of dirty and filthy. And
he's like a sleazeball.
He's
right?
a sleazeball. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's absolutely hysterical. Yeah. So it's like if they can bring that to the screen, done. I'm in.
Should we do some honorable mentions?
Yes, go for it.
Yeah. I'll just go first then. I guess like everything with Rocket. Hey, all the human, like Rocket building that gun, the Hadron, whatever it's
nailed
called.
Nailed Rocket. Yeah. The idea that he could pick up anything and just start building something out of it. That's
in
Rocket.
In particular, I love the whole scene in general was amazing. The whole we're the losers, we've all lost something. That whole scene. But then to cap it off with we're all standing up. You do it, Dave. You
know, you like that scene. Okay, I'm standing. Yeah, now we're all standing
like a bunch of jackasses in a circle.
That is like when they've been split from Rocket and Groot and they're all in the. In Yondu's ship, and then Rocket's shooting them.
Yeah.
From outside, and there's that exchange with Peter Quill. Rocket, we're all right. You know, like, the Kevin Bacon. Yes,
so that was your plan. Destroy the ship with the people in it that you were trying to save. We didn't have much time.
the great hero from Earth, Kevin Bacon.
The legend of Footloose.
your pelvic magic?
We're listening to the whole movie, basically. Like the cherry bomb scene.
Oh, like, the shooting up scene.
Yeah, where
basically.
They walk down the hallway and Gamora's yawning.
and Rocket's grabbing his groin.
Yeah. Actually, let's just do it. Scene one, page one.
Yeah. We've got the script here. We're going to reenact the film
like almost Spielberg action sequence where all the Guardians are trying to capture each other.
The sequence on Xandar.
Yeah, it's basically, that's your, talking about literary sequences, that's almost the Temple of Doom opening.
Totally, the antidote and the...
Yeah.
Yeah,
and one-upping each other constantly. It's brilliant. It's very well done.
We should mention Karen Gillan.
And
Ronan, you know,
an unrecognizable Karen Gillan.
Unrecognizable Lee Pace as well, though. I mean, both of these actors are
unrecognizable. Bradley Cooper.
Well, and Vin Diesel, funnily. Yeah.
That's the thing. All those major actors like disappearing into
the Jackson
role because
Pollock
they want.
I think we should mention
the Jackson Pollock joke. This is the only masturbation joke that's managed to make it into a Marvel film.
A superhero film, period.
Period, yeah.
That was good.
Just a quick warning to listeners, we're going to go over time. So, and we don't care.
Well, most of them have actually probably shut down by now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, Drax being literal. Too literal. Yeah, everything with Drax. Drax was almost a stealer.
Metaphors would go over his head.
No, they
nothing goes over my head.
My reflexes are too fast. I would catch it.
Behold.
Behold.
Calling Gamora a whore.
And just laughing maniacally as they're plunging through the ship at the end.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's actually one of my favorite bits. And then he's laughing his ass off.
But I also love when Rocket takes that little pod and goes straight through those two dudes going, yeah!
But I love it. That whole sequence ends with Gamora turning around to Cor going, we're just like Kevin Bacon. Yeah.
Close, but not sure. Let's just say every line of dialogue, every scene.
Everything.
But that's the thing, saying, we've mentioned like, what, 100 moments 12% between us, and we're going to go today
barely,
and be like...
Barely a concept.
We're going to go see it again and go, why didn't we say that?
Yeah. Look, we don't want to spoil the entire film for everybody, but we went straight past it. Let's come back to Karen Gillan for a moment, though, because... That was extraordinary. Not only is she under a ton of makeup and she looks amazing, but she's managed to change her entire demeanor. I mean, her accent is different.
She walks like an alien walk.
Yeah, she's got this completely different. You would not know that is Amy Pond.
She's not going
period.
For it. Rory!
It is an amazing Ronan. Transformation. And she's actually gone up in my esteem as being not just Amy Pond. She is a damn good actress.
Yeah, because that's really all we'd seen her in before.
Exactly. You know? So she's fantastic work.
And that's the thing. As we said before, no one's phoning it in. Everyone commits 100%. 112%.
Yeah. So they know. Michael Rooker, who basically has slept walk through most of The Walking Dead. I mean, that's what he does. He's really an enjoyable...
He's not just playing Merlin Space.
No, he's really enjoying himself. He's got Merle's accent, but he's really enjoying himself in that role. And I think that's the biggest thing. Everybody looks like they are having a blast making this film.
But they know, like, they're just looking at each other, like, the amazing sets. Like, it's not all CG. Like, they build huge sets. Like, the makeup's outstanding. It's like, it could be Oscar caliber. It could win the makeup category.
It should win all the Oscars.
But let's look at makeup, though, specifically. Like, the makeup on Drax alone is
so intricate.
Impeccable.
Yeah.
Like, it looks real. It just looks real. Like, that's the best compliment.
I reckon,
to me,
this should win Best Adapted Screenplay. Just hands down, should win Best Adapted Screenplay. Because it is, like you said before, it is the epitome of what you should do when you're taking an existing work and translating it to the screen.
It's why we go to the movies.
And if anybody is in doubt as to which Guardians this is, I love the fact that in the end credits it actually says, based on Guardians of the Galaxy by Abnett and Lanning. You know?
Look, I think we can probably come out of the spoiler section now because we've got some feedback to go into. So, boys, I think we've spoiled as much as we're going to spoil. I'm taking us out.
Stop the spoiler. Or does he?
He does. To be fair. Okay, so that was Guardians of the Galaxy. Our I think we can sum up everything we just said there with sploosh.
Sploosh. Mm-hmm.
We've got some feedback, and normally we'd call on the girl from Ipanema, but because it's our Guardians of the Galaxy special, I'm going to play a little bit of this underneath the feedback this week. Speaking of spoilers. So we've got two people who are accusing us of taking their money this week. Mitchell Deacon wrote to us and said, "Hey guys, great show. I've already said how awesome you are in my other email to GMC, so I won't do it again. Instead, I will say thanks for making me even more poorer than I already was. Not only am I willing to pay each week to buy the next volume of Saga, I'm still way behind, but I now have to start buying Fables. I'm thinking of joining Marvel Unlimited to access all their comics. Have any of you joined this and your thoughts on it? I have, but I don't really use it that much, to be honest.
I'm thinking about joining it. I haven't joined it yet because I keep looking at it going, is it going to give me value? Because it's all back issues, so there's no new stuff
there.
Keep in mind,
we already subscribed to the hardcover collection.
And we're buying trades. Yeah. And so you kind of sit there and go, I just don't know if I want to pull the trigger on that.
But sometimes
get some wicked little gifts with it.
But also the Marvel Unlimited thing, they're adding stuff to it constantly. So.
And it has grown a lot more since I last
looked
at
it. It's pretty awesome.
So. And they've improved the app, too. The original iPad app for Marvel Unlimited was terrible.
Yeah.
It was buggy as hell. They've actually improved that, so...
He goes on to ask us about our thoughts on Comixology and the DRM backups. We covered that last week.
Yes.
I said, lastly, have you guys seen the trailer for Kingsman: Secret Service?
Yes.
I just finished reading the comic book by Mark Millar and Dave Gibbons. The movie is directed by Matthew Vaughn. Are you guys planning to do a cross review when it comes out? Yes, we will.
Interestingly enough, Richard and I talked about this last week. I don't think we did it on air. I have read it and I have seen the trailer and I'm actually quite excited about this. I was actually asking you when it's coming out. For those who are confused, the film is not called Kingsman. The film is just called The Secret Service.
Okay.
So, sorry, the book is just called
The Secret Service. The film is called Kingsman.
The Kingsman, The Secret Service. It's Mark Millar. It's a limited series. It's like Her Majesty's Secret Service. It's actually pretty good, and the trailer looks awesome.
The other bit of feedback we had, of course, is from our longtime listener and good friend, John D., who says...
Him again.
He says, because he just went and saw the film last night as well and had to send his thoughts in.
Of course.
He said, JD's thoughts for when here's the girl, hey girl, but we've just stuffed that by playing Ooh Child instead. By the five
girl, stars. I like Ooh Child as this.
I think so
man.
Too, yeah.
The girl will come back at some point.
This will be on because we're actually changing GMC to the Guardians Movie Club. JD's thoughts.
That ain't a joke, guys. Get ready for it.
He says, hey guys, just a few thoughts on the recent subject matter. Fables, yes, I have ordered it based on your recommendation. It's criminal that bookdepository.com doesn't get a kickback from you guys.
Lock and Key, I read the first volume a while ago and loved it. Now it's done, I'll get the rest and devour it.
Can I just say I read volume 2 and it's even better.
There you go. He said, the way that Longo devoured scalps. Here you go. Guardians, despite my personal dislike of Dave Bautista, I think the cast was perfect and it ticked every box to fit into the Marvel Universe of building. I still maintain it'll make $2 billion. So up next, con season, I assume that Black Widows and Captain Americas will be replaced, both Star-Lord and Gamoras. Stay awesome and I'll catch you guys soon. JD, PS, why do you let it lick your face?
John, I have a sound effect for you.
Live Foley done by Dave Longo. That is our feedback for this week. This has been not as long a show as we thought we'd go for. We spent more time talking about the pick of the week than we normally would, but Dave and I have joked we could rightly spend an entire episode on this every week for next year.
What we really want is people to go out and have a chance to see it.
Look, go out and see this film, go and support the film. It's going to earn a lot of money, but I think it just needs your love and attention because it is the little film that could, and it has, and we love it. And
I'm going to go on record and say I think it is, out of all the Marvel films that have come out so far, I think it is my favorite. So
I agree. Yep. Yeah. Look, yeah, I said that about Winter Soldier, but it just got better.
I've said it about every progressive Marvel film, I think, because they keep upping themselves.
We'll probably say it about Age of Ultron, so it'll keep going from there. But
Ant-Man.
Well,
have you guys heard what they're calling Ant-Man on the internet?
No.
Cant-Man.
Just one quick thing before we go today, Richard.
Yes.
Have you guys seen that test footage from Deadpool?
Deadpool. I saw the leaked copy of it, and that's been officially released now.
And
by
it
the
looks great. If they could make that movie,
it's perfect because that is. I mean, literally, that's what Deadpool should have been in X-Men Origins. And if they make that film, and apparently if they do make the film, they'll just pretend that the X-Men Origins thing didn't happen.
Exactly.
Like we all do. So I really hope they do because it does the same thing that Guardians does, which is it comes in with humor, adult action, and a healthy dose of decent acting and both. So it's mostly CG work though, isn't it?
He is. It's all motion capture with Ryan, but it is Ryan Reynolds doing the motion capture and the voice, and it's fantastic.
It's brilliant.
Go
and find it online. It's freely available now. Next week, we will be doing, as we said, Kick-Ass 3 and a little bit of an
overview.
Did you guys
see that test footage of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that's playing in the city?
Yeah, it doesn't look finished to me.
I don't know.
Next week, we will be doing Kick-Ass 3 with, as we said, special guest Laramie Taylor coming back to the show. We had him on before for a one-shot talking about his book, A Voice in the Dark, which you should go out and get, by the way. Go and read A Voice in the Dark. Volume 1 is out in trade at the moment.
And it's actually on special on Comixology, I think.
Absolutely it is, So that's damn good value.
Yes,
to go and get his book because it's an excellent read, and it's the second part of it's coming out and it's going full color. So definitely one to watch because you don't want to be one of those people who has to jump on a bandwagon. You want to be on the bandwagon so no one has to push you off.
So that you can say to other people, "I told you so.
I told you about the book." And you have that smug sense of self satisfaction.
It's how I felt about Guardians.
You can be like those game. You can be like the Game of Thrones book readers who go, "Yeah, I knew that was going to happen." When they eventually adapted into an award-winning TV series, so that's next week. you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me online at BehindThePanels.net, which has been really updated a lot in the last week because a lot of news has come out. But of course, now that the con's over, it's going to slow down a little bit. You can also find me at TheRealBits.com. David.
You can find me on Twitter at Dave McVeigh. You can find me on the new film, actually, reboot. So it's coming back, so you can hear me on that. And, of course, at geekactually.com, home of all of this nonsense.
I'm Dave Longo. You can find me on Twitter at Dave Longo and in IMAX Darling Harbour every Saturday for the next 8 weeks.
And I'll be right next to him. But until then, if you want to send us any feedback or any comments, hit us up at feedback@behindthepanels.net. Leave us a positive comment and rating on iTunes. It's how we get the show to be even bigger and better than it already is. Or just hit up our Facebook page, facebook.com/behindthepanels, or on Twitter @behindthepanels. Until next week, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm Dave McVeigh.
I was going to say I'm Groot, but that's hacky. Do you have it there, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
It's very quiet, I'm Groot.
He was sad.
He's sad that the show's over, but he knows we're coming back next week, so.
I am Groot.
All right, nice.
And this is Behind the Panels.
Listen, baby.